The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
You are very welcome. Brian O'Driscoll, you are very welcome to studio. How are things?
Good on, thanks.
So it's Cork this week for a 23-man squad. Week off, two wins in the bag. It must feel pretty good, I'd imagine, in the middle of the Six Nations, getting into that week off with those two wins.
Yeah, listen, you know, they've started exactly as they would have wanted. Everyone talks about having to win your home games in the Six Nations and a huge amount of pressure. That pressure valve has been released on the basis of two wins. You would imagine that they shouldn't have any difficulty in dispatching Italy at home in round four. Mm. So, you know, anything hereafter is an added bonus from where we were post-World Cup in a new era under Andy Farrell. And now with confidence buoyed on the back of a really good performance against Wales, you know, the way England have stuttered a small bit and a couple of their big players not fit, there's every reason to be confident but wary as to what Twickenham will hold for us in whatever 10 days' time. So it's an exciting place, and it's a quick turnaround from even where we were after the Scotland game. I think there was a lot of doom and gloom. People got very much down on the team. It was almost the World Cup disappointment was reinforced with a bit of a lacklustre performance against Scotland. But, the grind they turned that victory into was then reinforced with a miles better performance against Wales and a very clinical display.
It's interesting thinking about the evolution of Ireland under Andy Farrell, because it's going to take a little bit longer for us to see the full form of it. But Sexton, in the aftermath of the game on Saturday evening, was saying, I think some of the messages that came out of our camp haven't been taken the way they should be. So he's referring to the Scotland week, and as you said, perhaps some of the negativity after the Scotland game. We have taken a lot of what Joe's done in the last few years and built on it, added bits to it, to suggest we have thrown everything away is just wrong. It is inaccurate. And that's exactly it. We're seeing some of the good elements of Joe Schmidt, and then perhaps some of the Mike Catt influence coming into play in attack?
Yeah, I would imagine so. Again, Mike Catt will have more of a stamp on what way he wants the attack shape to look with time, no different than Andy Farrell and with any coach that coaches at international level. It's difficult to stamp, you know, have your imprint put on things immediately. So I think we have to be patient with that, but we're getting to see it. I think Mike Catt's style probably isn't overly dissimilar to what Stuart Lancaster likes to do at Leinster, so I think there's a bit of continuity for Sexton playing in blue and then again in green. I think with regards to the things that were said, it was more the unsaid word, and I think maybe some of those comments, you look at Ian Henderson's comments about, you know, the environment being different and a bit more open and a bit more communicative, between coaching staff and players. And you have to remember, in all new environments, there's an excitement and a freshness.
Of course
there is. That was the case 6-7 years ago with Joe Schmidt. I was there, and we were thrilled to have a new voice, a new face in there, something that was different than we'd been hearing for the previous 3 or 4 years under Declan Kidney. We'd obviously had a taste of it at Leinster for a couple of seasons, or for 3 seasons. But I remember, you know, Paul O'Connell and those players coming in thinking, gosh, you know, how lucky you guys have been to have this quality of coaching. And then over the course of time, 4 or 5 years, the natural thing is for things to get a bit stale, and particularly when it's a little bit off and then the results aren't going for you, it unravels very quickly. And listen, let's judge Andy Farrell for what's happening at the moment. Will things be different in 4 or 5 years' time under Andy Farrell? And then when a new person comes in, will lads talk about that being fresh and great and a great new environment? Of course they will. That's the cycle of coaches.
Was Schmidt more a good cop at the start than he was at any point after?
I think so, but I was gone for a number of years. I only had a season of him at international rugby, and by all accounts, I think he got a lot firmer with the team. He got harsher on them, but also they were a team that were growing, and maybe he felt the need to knock that bit of toughness into them, that, you know, standards needed to be excellent for them to achieve what they managed to achieve. So the only problem is, you know, the evolution of any side, players get fed up of that. And And that's all well and good when you're winning. In 2018, I'm sure that there were some cracks there, but because they went an unbeaten season, because they beat the All Blacks, they won the Grand Slam, won away to Australia on tour, who's going to step, you know, pipe up and go, actually, I'm not happy with, doesn't matter, because they're winning.
Yeah.
So when things didn't go for us, and starting with the English performance early on this year, it opens an opportunity for people to go, well, I kind of thought I was keeping my mouth shut in the background, or I didn't like this. And then it's reinforced with Wales and again with England and Twickenham before the World Cup, and then Japan, and then kind of the coffin is sealed with the All Blacks performance. So 5, 6, 7 years is a long time for a coach to say, fresh, new ideas coming in, and very few wave off in the sunset and go, thanks very much, you're welcome for what I've delivered. It more often than not ends in disappointment, and that's why coaches move on.
Yeah, of course it does. A couple of the new things that we've seen, a couple of the new ideas, perhaps Gordon Darcy in the Irish Times this morning saying Jordan Larmour, Bundiaki showing up as first receiver more often than before, and Jonathan Sexton appearing behind the rucks a little bit more often because the opposition can't guess which way he wants to bring the play. Is that in line with what you've been seeing? Is there anything else that you've noticed from the opening games?
Well, I think that's been coming from Leinster, to be honest.
Okay.
I think you look at the Irish team, they're trying to get to the middle a lot. And most sides try and get to the middle because that's where, we talked about it last week, that's where you split that defensive line and you don't get as aggressive line speed. But what it also does is it gives you an opportunity to identify mismatches easier, or when someone hasn't ploughed numbers around the corner in defence, or if they've left the short side a bit sparse, when you sit in behind as first receiver, you can pick either side there. Whereas if you decide to choose one way or the other and you realise the far side is actually where the attacking threat is on, takes you 3-4 seconds to get there. The cavalry can pile around the corner. So it's a position of power to be able to sit in behind the ruck and almost weigh up which side is going to be to your benefit to attack down. Looking at what bodies you have on either side, what personnel you have on either side. Sometimes it's worthwhile going 5-on-5 or 6 defenders on 5 attackers if you've got 3 front rowers defending together on a blind side and you've got, 2 wingers and 2 centres and an out half to go down and go, okay, let's try and pick off a mismatch here. So I think that is left up to the brains trust, which ultimately is Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton, first and foremost, they're driving the direction
like
of where the team
role.
Goes. Pardon?
It's almost like a quarterback role from the way you're talking there.
It's absolutely a quarterback role. And there's almost, the running back in Jordan Larmour is sitting behind Johnny Sexton as well. We saw it in the Italian, the Scottish game, where there was a break in the first 10 or 15 minutes, where he worked hard from a ruck on the left-hand side, and he's the extra body creating the numbers on that right-hand side. And he does that for Leinster the whole time. That's his point of difference. He's an ability under fatigue to be able to coast, and then accelerate and stay on the gas when he's made his breaks. He got an offload to Conor Murray, and ultimately it didn't come to anything, but they've made 40 or 50 metres up the pitch just through hard work and through being able to identify and outwork the opposition.
His try, Jordan Larmour's try, was unbelievable at the weekend. To me, I see the step and I see an amazing finish. What are you seeing? I presume there's a lot more to it than just that.
Yeah, there is. I kind of felt as though Conor Murray was looking for it for a while. It's a bit like, when Jacob Stockdale gets an opportunity one-on-one, Ulster try and go to him a lot one-on-one because he nearly always beats his man, irrespective of whether it's his opposite winger defending against him or not. One-on-one, he fancies his chances. So it's about trying to create those opportunities for Larmour. So I saw Murray looking a couple of times and it wasn't quite on. And it first of all starts with Conor Murray's pass. The quality of it and where Larmour has to go with it. It immediately sends him on an overs, which is an outside break. It's out in front of him, which means he's accelerating, going full tilt onto it. He has to stretch for it. Exactly the sort of pass you want to stress defences. So what happens there is that Tompkins is in at second defender. He's got Wainwright on the inside. He's got Josh Adams on the outside. But Lee Halfmany is there to close the gate as well. But Josh Adams still feels as though he has to play soft. It's not ideal that far out from your line to be playing soft. So as soon as Tompkins sees Josh Adams' shoulders turn to the touchline, he feels under pressure, thinking Larmer's got gas, his reputation precedes him, he's going to burn me on the outside. And what you immediately do is don't get burnt there. So hard acceleration from Tompkins. Now, the first thing you do when you're accelerating hard, or sorry, the last thing you do when you're accelerating hard is you don't tackle low. You go high and grab. It's just a natural instinct to do it. It is such a hard thing to be going all out and then to put in a really low shot and effective tackle to boot. So he goes in, reaches, and it's not even that impressive a step from Jordan Larmer. Gets hit 10 metres out. Tompkins should get a scrag for everyone else to be able to mop up on the inside, Wainwright or Thomas Williams, who's running the nine roll in behind, but somehow he's managed to get in. So there's a multitude of factors there. It's obviously, the video analysis that people would have done on Jordan Larmer, that he's got this wicked outside break, so don't get smoked on the outside, but also Conor Murray's pass that sent him there, the overchase from Tompkins, and then the lack of insurance policy in Williams, who should have closed off. He should have still, and I think Williams hits him 5 metres out. He goes low, probably scrags him down a metre out. You scramble, you might survive it. But to concede when the first contact has been made 10 metres out is very, very disappointing defence.
So Jordan Larmer, can we get this level from him more consistently as a fullback or more consistently as a wing? Because you talk about almost the sideline being another defender, and because he can step off both feet, you're almost better off having him in a more central position, I'd imagine.
Undoubtedly better off a fullback. Gets more opportunities. I thought he had really good balance to his game at the weekend. Even when he runs down a blind alley, he's got good fight. He's not someone that concedes in the tackle and accepts a big impact coming at him. He might look small in stature. He's not tiny. He's bulky and he's obviously very powerful. You look at some other players that Chezen Colby comes to mind, where very small in stature but incredibly explosive. And Jordan Larmer is of that ilk, maybe not quite to that degree, but he's a very, very capable fighter in contact, and that's what you need when you're not always going to make the correct decisions when you try and counterattack, and you will run into heavy traffic sometimes. All you're looking for is good quality ball placement and to make sure that you fight for 1-2 seconds on the ground, wait for the cavalry to arrive, and then you can set up play thereafter. But it's the times that he does get it right, be it kick selection or counterattack, and then with the opportunity of offloading, I think is what differentiates him from other out halves that we have going on the circuit at the moment within the provincial setup. I think he's exciting, and it feels as though he's going to make things happen. Yeah. So players, if I was wingers or outside backs, I'd be just trail running him the whole time because it feels as though he's going to get his hands free a lot of the time.
We were chatting to Quinny about this on Monday, and he was, I think we were both kind of floating the idea that perhaps if you had Will Addison at fullback and Andrew Conway on one wing and Jordan Larmer on the other wing, you at least have an even more exciting prospect in the back three. I would accept that excitement often comes from the unknown, that because we haven't tried that before, we have these fanciful notions that would be amazing. It might be something cool to try against Italy, for example. I'm getting the sense, though, from you that it wouldn't be the most effective option. The back three we have right now are sort of an immovable object in terms of having their starting place.
Yeah, I have to say, and I've been critical of Jacob Stockdale, but questioned certainly the defensive side to his game, and I thought there was a lot of pressure on him this season to produce there. He hasn't had a huge amount to be asked of him, but I was very impressed in the first 10 or 15 minutes with him, with how many touches he got of the ball, how much action he looked for, how effective he was. He'd won questionable kick that got caught on the full by Dan Bigger, but I thought he had lots of really good moments. I thought the back three were very exciting. Conway, comfortably the standout performer. I think Quinny was the one that gave Stander the man of the match. I don't know how. I thought for me it was Conway way before his try. And second, Tadhg Furlong with his 65-minute stint or whatever he did. And then maybe CJ third. But I think the quality of the back three, the threat they had, the decisions they made, the simplicity of a lot of their play, just allowed the pack to get into shape and for the halfbacks to dictate play.
For the third consecutive Six Nations, we're going to have a conversation about the midfield power rankings and depth chart within Ireland's squad. Gary Ringrose picks up an injury. Ireland's form 13, potentially Europe's form 13 in the first half of the season and going into 2020 as well.
Bakatawa might have something to say about that.
He might have something to say about that.
We'll let that one slide.
Does he go straight back into the team? Because on the form of Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki as a duo, as a partnership in midfield, you're looking at that and you're thinking, let's power on with this. Now, he's going to be out for the England game more than likely, Ringrose. So it's not a conversation we need to have just yet. But I think given Henshaw's performance the weekend, it's probably something we should consider.
Yeah, and you have to remember too, before the World Cup, you know, Henshaw and Aki were going to be the centre pairing going into it. They were the two that played well against Wales. Gary Ringrose was struggling for form. You know, he's coming off the bench and onto the wing, or being pushed from centre onto the wing, and he couldn't quite get a grip of what he wanted to do. Obviously, the possession or the way the game was being played probably didn't suit him as much. I think he's really enjoying that at Leinster, and we're seeing the best of him. I think he's not having to carry in close quarters as much under Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen or Andy Farrell as he maybe did under Joe Schmidt. And that's to his benefit. He's kind of your stereotypical 13 outside break, good footwork, good offloading game, decent passer. So use those skills rather than getting him to carry the ball over advantage line. Of course, he'll have to do that occasionally, but I thought there was too much of that in his game. And he's willing to do it. He's a selfless player, so he's willing to sign up for that. But I think if you've got to have a game plan that has the ability to be malleable to the qualities of what the skill set of the individuals are as well. I think we're seeing the best of Gary Ringrose. He was in a really rich vein of form. And in fairness to, you know, we questioned Robbie Henshaw as whether is this his moment to step in. He's 26, coming into the prime of his physical career. He's got bagloads of experience. He's been unfortunate with some injuries, but I was really impressed with the aggressiveness of his carrying, with the willingness to offload and the quality and the skill of some of the offloads. There was one to Henderson, which he seemed had in kind of the palm of his hand, but he flicked out of it, you know, right into his breadbasket. I just thought that's a player playing with high confidence and is being given the rope to be able to go and throw those sort of passes. I think that's the sort of pass that you would have stuck a year, 2 years ago, played, you know, continuity, go through the phases, whereas now changing that point of contact, he made two offloads within 30 seconds and it added, I'd say, 15, 20 metres of advantage line to Ireland. And we've got to become that sort of team. I was looking at the halftime stats. I didn't see them on full time, but it was like six offloads to 14 to Wales. Now, six is still okay for a half. Yeah. There will be lots of games where we'd have three and four, so six and a half is still good, and we're getting there. And I think that has to be, we've got to be a team that's willing to take a few more risks, because when we come up against the bludgeon, get into the arm wrestle, that's where we get knocked out. So we have to have that adaptability to be able to throw the pass and throw the offload and use the skill set that we know that we're capable of. It just felt as though we were confining ourselves to a stereotype that didn't suit us in the last year. Let's break the shackles from that and play a bit more freely and let people express themselves. And I think we saw aspects of that.
I wanted to get your thoughts on Matt Williams' comments on Virgin Media over the course of the weekend, because himself and Ronan O'Gara had a bit of an argument about whether or not this performance from Ireland against Wales should be the minimum. He said it was the minimum that should be acceptable from this group of players, and he says everyone's made excuses for this group in the past. Is that something you go along with, that this should be the minimum for Ireland?
I think, you know, within the setup, you probably think this is our benchmark. But I don't think it's a hard and fast statement where if we dip, you know, a couple of percent below it, that we're going to, you know, lambaste one another or lose the head. I think it's anytime you have a good performance, it's more of a reminder to yourselves that that's what we're capable of. So why would we dip below that when we can get to here? I don't necessarily think that, I don't know, I don't want to get in Matt's head and understand what he was saying about it, but I think they're probably saying something similar within the setup. So I don't know why you know, I think it looks good on TV when you get a bit argumentative. I could also see Rodgers' point of view, the way Matt was saying, because of where he came from, his previous comments as well, it seemed like a harsh comment on the back of a great performance. But I if it wasn't inferred that way, I think it's a fair enough comment that that's the standard now they know that they want to get to and continually be at. And if they can do that, they'll be a very hard team to beat. You dip below it and you'll be susceptible to better teams getting the better of you.
Is he on the money when he says that, so about a camp or being inside the camp, say from your experience, would there ever be a big win or a big performance? And it's not so much the ecstasy of the win, potentially that it lasts for a while, but as the dust settles a couple hours later, you're like, right, okay, this is the benchmark now. We have to, I don't know, we do I not let this slip to quote.
I don't think you think that way. Okay. I think you think more, this, we can play like this. So let's try and get to that every time. I don't think you think we can't get below that, because that's a bit of a negative comment.
Okay, yeah.
It's more about thinking positively that, look at some of the brilliant rugby that we did play, you know, great retention, great skill set. So, okay, now let's just remind ourselves that this is the brand that we're capable of. Let's do it week on week. So it's a bit glass half full rather than glass half empty. And I think that's the way that they'll be looking at the video footage, and they'll realise the things that they can improve on, and there's absolutely scope for that. But for the most part, defensively very good as well. Spacings were excellent. You know, their ability, it felt like a role reversal from a couple of years ago where Wales were getting us on the edge a good bit, and we were getting so narrow in defence.
2018.
Kind of 2018, even when we beat... Even when we beat them, they still got a couple of tries out in the 15. They managed to stretch us where we got narrow. I couldn't get over how narrow Wales got and how much we were able to get out into the extremities. You know, I'm sure Sean Edwards must have been looking kind of with a wry smile, because it just looks like a completely different defensive setup with them trying to play aggressive line speed but not having the spacings. And we had the quality of pass and the depth to be able to encourage those shooting defences and still get the pass away. Saw one for Conway's try from Larmer, great pass from Keith Earls to Larmer, and if Stockdale hadn't overrun it, it probably would have been the bonus point try with 20 minutes to go. I think it was... there was so much positivity to take from it. And like I say, most of the time when I come in here, it looked better second time round again, and probably it'll look better each time you watch it.
The key question, Brian, is, are we seeing more dog in this Irish team?
I think there looked like there was a nastiness in some players. I think Tyke Furlong is a guy that looks as though he's playing to prove a point. If you remember, he'd a quiet enough World Cup. Andrew Porter got selected for the Northampton game away from home, and Furlong was benched. And sometimes that works in a coach's favour, where they've got two players similar enough quality vying for the same position, and you bench one for a while. It's just a small little reminder that we can live without you, particularly how well Porter was playing. But I think since then, Furlong, I've been very impressed with him the last two weekends. His work rate, the appetite in defence, kick chase, things that you wouldn't associate someone driving from a tight head position.
Yeah.
The last play of the game against Scotland, you know, the amount of moments he had in that, working hard where it looked as though he had cramp and playing through it. I was really, really impressed with him, and he looks as though he's carrying super hard with a lot of aggression. And maybe we don't need that level of Sean O'Brien. And I'm not saying that things were taken out of context in that. I'm not saying that some of those players don't possess any aggressiveness, but I just don't think there's a Sean O'Brien there.
Well, what do you mean, like as in bending the rules a little bit? Or?
Not even that. I just thought everything he did was so confrontational.
Okay.
Everything. And the players that have played with him will understand that more than anything. That it just, he demanded so much every time. You knew that it was 100 miles an hour, and that he never, ever took an easy option. If he could carry, I never saw him carry at 90, 98 or 99%. It was 100% every time. Same with every shot. And it's a mentality. And I think they're quite that type of player is quite unique. You don't get them every generation. I think you get, or you might get a couple every generation. And I think comparatively, if you were to ask, and I'm sure you know, no one likes reading that, you know, there's question, there's dog in them. But I don't think, I stand by, I don't think any of those players are of that Sean O'Brien ilk of you know, dog or you know, being an on-field tug.
Can they become that player?
I think it's probably built in you or not. I think it's really a mentality. And listen, there's guys, I think, another guy, I think CJ Stander, the aggressiveness that he is playing with and hitting with is hugely admirable at the moment. I think he's a key component. Obviously, he's gotten two man of the matches, so without stating the obvious, but it's you know, I read an article that talked about him being constantly questioned. I would absolutely love him to develop an offloading game, because if he can, he will be unplayable. I just don't feel as though he looks as though he's going to get the ball out of contact. And there's lots of chances to do it, because he's got such aggression to get beyond the tackle where he can turn his body and actually get it away. It just feels as though sometimes he's looking for another yard himself, rather than realising the work is done there, the defence is scrambling, now look for the offload. And if he can do that, I think he will be a real, like a real standout performer in the Six Nations for this Irish team for the next few years.
We are out of time, Brian, but you did say a player who expects the most from their teammates, and I can't leave you go without asking about Sexton, and I guess that element of his character that often comes out. But now what we're seeing is a dialogue to Johnny Sexton, because he's Ireland captain. What did you make of his interactions with Roman Pott on Saturday?
Yeah, I think at times you could understand why, you know, he came in a little bit frustrated at one or two decisions. Looking back in the video, I think from both sides' perspectives, there were a couple of questionable ruck calls. It seems sometimes it's a bit of a free-for-all under Pott. But I thought Johnny, he grew into the game, although he got better in the second half. Johnny Wilkinson made a really good point. Maybe the time to go harder at the referee is when you've scored rather than when the opposition have scored. I think sometimes you have to take your foot off and accept that they've got a bit of momentum there, and there's no point in antagonising the referee, because it's almost reinforcing that he thinks that team is in the ascendancy.
Okay.
When you get frustrated and get annoyed. So sometimes, you know, that's a time to let something go. And Johnny will learn that with time, of understanding you can't have a go every time you're annoyed. You've got to pick your moments. You've got to pick your battles. And there was, you know, there was a few things that you look back, and there's sliding doors moments where I think there was a penalty on 5 minutes into the second half, and he got two penalty options, you know, one on the touchline and one around the 15, and it was a 12-7 game. You knock that over, it's a two-score game. But yeah, he went to the more difficult penalty in the corner.
Van der Veer
scored the try. But I think don't run the risk. Got to score a line out. You've got to make sure that the line out maul is good enough. And
so
I get,
you'd be going
I
for
get,
the post in that situation.
Absolutely.
Even in hindsight.
I think, even in hindsight. 8-point game. Two scores is where you want to get to. There's a security that comes with two scores. It doesn't matter how it comes. So it gets to, granted, it gets to, I think he knocked over the conversion. So it's 19-7. That's a 12-point game. But that's still two scores.
Mm.
So granted, it's a try and two tries and a conversion, but you know, the way Ireland were defending, that's, you know, that's a difficult line to break. They were, you know, the discipline was only okay, but I just think those sort of things, because there was a try, no one will ever talk about it, but I think there are things that you just always have to look back and kind of wonder, should I have done that in that time? I personally would have kicked it goal, definitely.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's being super critical of all the decisions, and the coaching staff are this week as well.
Well, we're scrutinising all the negative. You know, there was positive things where he got, you know, the, besides the way he played the game, his defensive moments, but quiet things that we probably didn't hear him saying to Romain Poit that we're oblivious to, that, you know, helped us get into the game or helped him build his relationship with Poit. So I think he's doing okay. But listen, we're on radio here to pick holes, aren't we?
Absolutely. We'll be picking holes again next week. Brian, thanks a million for popping in. I'm sure this time next week we'll have some Eddie Jones comments to sink our teeth into ahead of the big one in Twickenham. Chat to you next time, Brian.
Cheers.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.